Hey, everybody. It's Richard. I always love when we get an opportunity to reconnect with the creator of the show, Mike Wolff. Mike's focusing heavily on the food tech space these days, and we're lucky enough to have him with us to talk about what all that entails. And coming up quickly in June, I'll be returning to the Smart Kitchen Summit in Seattle, Washington, where Mike and his team pull together so many great innovators in that space. We had a great time catching up with Mike and hope you enjoy this conversation about food tech and the smart kitchen.
Hey everyone, I'm Adam Justice from ConnectSense, and welcome to the Smart Home Show. I'm joined as usual by my co-host Richard Gunther from the Digital Media Zone, and in this episode, we're rejoined by Mike Wolff, the original host of the show and creator of The Spoon and the Smart Kitchen Summit. Welcome, Mike.
Hey guys, great to be back. It's been a while. I think the last time I did it was like a Christmas show, maybe 2 years ago, and I have to say, I missed last year's Christmas show, and it looks like Richard got a new studio for Christmas.
Yeah, I did. I moved and built a walk-in closet into a studio. So, yeah. I forgot it has been that long, and I know we also had you on about 2 years ago. No, 3 years ago now, in 21, I think it was, when we were trying to figure out how to do all these virtual conferences. And you're going to be doing the Smart Kitchen Summit virtually. Now we're back to doing it in person. So we'll talk about that. But before we get into all of it, we always start the episode out with a random question. And my question
I'm ready.
To Adam and to you, we'll start with Adam, is what's the last music album you intentionally listen to through its entirety? And I say intentionally, like, because I don't know if your daughter's listening to Taylor Swift in the background, or your son or your wife or your partner, and that wasn't something you put on, that doesn't count.
Okay. Well, you actually unintentionally hinted at my answer, which is Taylor Swift.
All right.
The Tortured Poets Department. I was not a major Swiftie, but my wife is. And for her birthday last year, we went to see Taylor Swift in Brazil, which was epic. And so in preparation for that, I kind of like took it all in. And I'm now Team Swiftie. So when her new album came out, I listened to it all the way through.
Very good. I still haven't heard that album. I still haven't heard anything on it, actually. I can't believe it.
There's a couple good tracks.
Yeah, I'm sure there's. How about you, Mike?
So are you a Swifty over 50, Richard, or maybe under 50?
No, I totally am. I totally am, which is why it's surprising that I have not listened to the new album. One of my favorite albums, kind of all time these days, is Folklore. So
It's really hard to think, because I'm not like I'm just a Spotify playlist guy so much, but I usually listen to a full album when I'm going to a concert. And I usually go to like 3 or 4 a year. We went to Black Keys is one I probably listened to all the way through when they came to Seattle. My wife is a Foo Fighters super fan, so I'll usually listen to like Foo Fighters before we go to the concert. And you may remember he was a lead singer. This is super old school for Men to Work, but Colin Hay's had a great solo career. So I listen to a lot of Colin Hay, for those of you who probably haven't heard of him. I'm an old guy.
I know that. That's cool.
Yeah. Not super exciting, but I've also been watching the Taylor Swift concerts since they came on online. So that, and the album drops and all that. So that's been fun to watch. Let's do
it. Yep, for sure. It is funny though, because I think now because of playlists and all the different music streaming services, you don't often intentionally go to listen to a whole album. And so that's why I thought this was an interesting question.
That's a good question.
Yeah. My answer here is Beyonce's most recent album, the country targeted or country themed album. I really enjoyed it. I don't know why everybody's so insanely crazy and think it's the most brilliant thing in the world. I think there are 3 or 4 really good songs on it, but I enjoyed it. I think it's good.
It's interesting. I'll have to try and listen to it. That was a polarizing album because like people loved it. And then like people who are horrible people just automatically should say, we're saying like Beyonce shouldn't do country music, which is ridiculous.
Right. So which means they don't know anything about country music.
It agitated a lot of people as well, who are just kind of ridiculous. So,
yep.
Well, if you want to submit a question for us to open the show, you can mark the question on Twitter or Mastodon with the hashtag AskAdamAndRichard, or send it to us at feedback@smarthome.fm.
All right, Mike, when we took over the show, the Smart Home show, it was largely because you had kind of pivoted in your career from the smart home to focusing on smart kitchen technology, and that has evolved more toward food tech at large. And food tech is such a kind of a nebulous topic. How do you describe what food tech entails?
Yeah, I think that I probably had a broader definition purposefully because we were trying to fit a lot of it under The Spoon, which is our website where we write about it. I think that a lot of the people in the categories we covered, like alternative proteins versus smart kitchen appliances versus restaurant tech, these weren't necessarily groups that are intermingling. But if you look at it from a, like a 10,000 foot view, they could conceivably be all under kind of the broader food tech umbrella. I would kind of say if, when I put all the lists of categories together, one is, you know, new forms of proteins and ingredients, et cetera, kind of the wet science side. I would say restaurant tech is interesting. Automation and AI applied to food. A big one that's really growing and really getting a lot of traction is just this idea of precision nutrition. Now, the idea of personalized nutrition has been around for a while, but it seems like with things like AI, you're getting some interesting startups in this category. There's also been over the past 5 years, like a cohort of companies doing things like personalized vitamins based on your biomarkers. So I may be rambling, Richard. I apologize.
No, that's, I mean, you're kind of making the point that covers so many areas. It's really fascinating. It's way more than you often think about when people use the word tech in a consumer perspective, right? In this case, we're talking about science and biology, and that does combine with what we might think of as traditional technology, whether it be machinery or digital or what have, or AI, like you were mentioning, into this huge industry that is probably still all competing for the same bucket of money to get started, right?
Yes and no. I think there's a lot of mission-driven, sustainability-driven venture capitalists and private investors that were focusing on the space. And like a lot of the broader technology space, there's been a lot of headwinds and kind of these companies have the investors have pulled back a little bit. So there's mission driven companies. And there's those who are like kind of focused on like more SaaS driven type of investments. So that's like restaurant tech. Restaurant tech is a very SaaS business. You know, you have the Toasts of the world and et cetera. There's also the automation players.
So let's back up for people who even really know what you're talking about, right? So you're talking about services that support the restaurant industry. And probably one of the most common examples is point of sale services that aren't just like you buy a cash register or a menu machine and you pay your vendor to set it up and then it's yours. Now people are more or less subscribing to those types of services like Toast that make a lot of money by basically taking their cut of the restaurant's income and so forth.
That one's an interesting one too, because they kind of came out of the necessity during the pandemic of like all of a sudden these restaurants were like, oh crap, I got to figure out how to do digital orders. And they filled that need and then kind of backed their way into being, you know, the payment provider for those restaurants. And from a customer perspective, it's awesome. Like I've seen before in restaurants where they like bring the terminal to you and you can tap to pay at your table, or they have the barcode on the receipt. Like it's a nice experience, but I'm sure it's expensive for the restaurant owner.
Yeah. All that accelerated, that digital transformation of the restaurant sector really picked up during the pandemic, much like, you know, grocery shopping really transformed pretty heavily during that space. But, but yeah, like now, like Adam, it's a common experience. You go into a restaurant now, they'll bring this point of sale to you, or it's a QR code, and that has all moved along pretty quickly. And so that space has seen a lot of investment over the past, I'd say, 5 years.
And the same is true kind of with delivery services, which again, I think the pandemic really ended up accelerating as well. Of course, same sort of thing with that. The restaurants are oftentimes paying through the nose for those types of services, but these are all applications of technology as brokers to the restaurant industry between the restaurants and customers.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but, and I, Adam, I don't know if you have kids, but my daughter loved ordering like Grubhub, and somehow our credit card got on her apps for like, like Uber Eats and et cetera. So yeah, for like 2 years there, like we were seeing a lot of food arrive at our doorstep with huge surcharges on top. Like that's the business. The thing is, even though they're charging a huge delivery fee, I think a lot of these companies are still losing money, but that's been an interesting space to watch.
Yeah, the one I was thinking is kind of interesting there is like the companies that are kind of rebranding or like ghost kitchening out of their kitchen. And so it appears on the app as something totally different, and it's really just a restaurant, you know. And I think the most egregious one I saw that was literally like Chuck E. Cheese's pizza, but they were selling as like some local hip pizza joint. I'm like, oh man.
Yeah. I think that arrival of virtual restaurants, you know, out of these existing kitchens was for some restaurants a savior, because like they had excess capacity. People were ordering a lot of food for that time frame. The problem is there's been a lot of fraud, and you've seen a lot of like these brands pop up where you can order, like open up Uber Eats, and there's like thousands of restaurants. Like you said, Adam, you don't know which ones are actually real or which ones aren't. And that's why like Uber Eats has been starting to crack down on these. What's been interesting to me to watch it over the past couple of years is the rise of the influencer driven kitchen concept. So you guys have probably heard of Mr. Beast. He actually ordered Beast Burger a couple of years ago and became really popular. It all fell apart. They ended up suing each other, but like, the idea was, if you're an influencer, why can't you just open a virtual restaurant concept? And so we've seen a few of those as well.
Interesting. Now, you've been talking a lot about robotics and how robotics has been getting more adopted by the restaurant industry. We've seen it in front of house. We've seen it in back of house. Technology in general, right? Like we see kiosks in a lot of restaurants now. Maybe that's also something that came from the pandemic, although I really don't know how touching something that everybody else touched was a great idea during the pandemic. But nonetheless, that's the experience at a McDonald's now. I'm really more interested in back of house stuff because I personally feel like that's where the drudgery jobs are. And are we seeing growth in the back of house with technology like that? I remember years ago, you talked about I think it was Cali Burger that had this burger making bot. And I don't know if that still exists. And then there was the pizza making machine that you had at Smart Kitchen Summit about 5 years ago. I don't think they're still around. So what's going on in that space now?
Oh my gosh. There's so many food robot companies. We just did a Shark Tank review yesterday. Carlos and I just basically watched the Shark Tank where a company called RoboBurger pitched their robot vending machine. Anyway, kind of stepping back, I do want to talk about consumer. I feel like the evolution of the smart home is robotics in our homes. But with regards to the commercial kitchen space, a lot of that, we saw like 5-6 years ago, the rise of guys like Flippy, basically a commercial robotic arm put into a box or a kitchen, and it's just moving around, or like it's just picking up French fries, putting it into the greaser, et cetera. I feel like that's generation one or one and a half. But there's also now starting to see purpose-built make lines and purpose-built like robotics that aren't just like some engineering student taking a robotic arm. They're really designed to automate and do the whole process. Picnic was kind of like that. So Picnic is a pizza robot, purpose built to do like saucing and cheesing and putting toppings on. And now you're starting to see ones that will take you through the whole process. There's a startup out of Japan called Tech Magic, really smart founder, and he's doing all sorts of food robots. I went into his restaurant in Tokyo because I was there for Smart Kitchen Summit Japan. And he literally had a fully automated pasta restaurant. So you order on a touchpad, which you probably hate, Richard, because I know you hate touch and you're germaphobe, it sounds like. That order goes into the kitchen. It automatically starts making the noodles. And then once the noodles are made, it's put on a conveyor belt, and then it goes to the saucing, the droppings, the seasonings, mixes it up in a pan. And then it goes all the way finally to serve it up on a plate. And then humans that are just kind of put final garnishings on, but all takes about 90 seconds. You might wonder how fast the the noodles get there. Well, the noodles are essentially already cooked and they're frozen. So they just drop it in hot liquid.
Okay.
Anyway, I was impressed. It's a fully automated pasta restaurant and it moved really quickly. And he's doing this also around bobas or soups as well. So I feel like you're starting to see some really interesting concepts that are much further evolved than we saw like just a few years ago.
Well, it's kind of like vending too, right? Like Japan's always had the lead on that sort of automation.
Yeah. It's a wonderland of vending if you go to Japan. And so, and we saw that early on with the food techs. So there's a company called Yokai, which not quite Japanese, but they actually are really popular in Japan. Essentially it's doing fresh ramen noodles in a vending machine. And so that is taking off in Japan. They're also here in the US as well.
That always just fascinates me. I still haven't been to Japan, so I still need to figure out how to get on your roster for one of the SKS Japan shows.
We'll get you there. We'll get you there.
So you mentioned that robotics is making its way into the home space. Now, are you talking about these devices with faces that Samsung and every other company are showing off on stage at CES each year, or is it something more tangible than that?
You've probably seen all the demos, these humanoid robots. It seems like the demo always involves like them standing at a table with a bowl of fruit. It's like, because like, it seems like the easiest thing you can engineer for with robotic vision is like, this is round and orange. It's an orange. This is a banana shape and sorting it. I mean, we've seen that with, I think what was the, not the Elon one, but there's another one they were doing it. I think Elon's robots always worked with food, also worked with food as well. No, I mean, I don't, a Shark Tank, maybe about 2 months ago, there's a startup called Chefy. And that was unlike, if you guys remember way back, there was a startup called Moly. They got best of CES in 2015. It was this crazy robotic arm contraption that basically was moving bowls around, grabbing stuff out of the fridge. And when that finally was available for someone to install, it was like $250,000, which is kind of crazy. Who's going to do that? Chefy is essentially about a $10,000 or $15,000 install. Still expensive, but it's built into your kitchen countertop, your granite countertops. So it's kind of like a built-in device. It doesn't have crazy arms. You don't have to, it actually can be built into your existing kitchen without redoing your whole kitchen. So I think we're starting to get there. You know, Sony about 5 years ago started working on kitchen robots because they saw culinary interactions with automation as a big investment future. And so that's something I think we'll see the bigger guys ultimately get into as well. Even like Apple, as Apple, you guys probably saw this, Adam, you're an Apple. Would I dare I say fanboy? They transitioned all their car workers to work towards home robotics and AI. So one of the new projects they're working on is home robotics. And so if Apple does a home robot, I would imagine they're thinking about use case scenarios in the kitchen.
Yeah. I wonder though, are we, you know, you mentioned very practical, functional things being more likely, but at the same time, I still see at CES, the examples of the future being Rosie the robot. And I just don't see that. As much as we thought it was a great idea, I don't need a robotic housekeeper or cook or something like that. I like the idea of purpose-built automation built into the kitchen. Let's talk about what that looks like, though, right? If it's countertop and there have been a number of different countertop automated devices that you've had at Smart Kitchen Summit over the years. I seem to remember like a mixing bowl thing that could put the ingredients together and then heat it. And basically like a, you know, you feed it the parts and it does the rest of of the job. You still have to do all the dicing and slicing. So I don't know how much time that saves. But if we're talking about stuff that's built into your kitchen infrastructure, the first thing I worry about is I remember working in food service and thinking what a pain it was to take things apart for cleaning at the end of every day. How does stuff like that work practically in a home?
That's a great point. I think there's all sorts of like hurdles that this whole concept would have to jump over, like getting consumers to actually build in something into their expensive kitchen, which is where we put most of our money in our house. Like it's the most expensive house. Like that's a crazy ask. then, like you said, like if say it gets all gunked up with the soy sauce and like the vegetables cut up and you have to pull apart your countertop, that's problematic. So that's why I don't think this is something that's going to be like hugely popular tomorrow. But I do think like on a 10-year time horizon, I can maybe see it. But Adam, Richard always has the great questions. He's always the skeptic. You haven't changed it. You got a new studio. You got a new studio, but you still haven't, you haven't changed your skeptical outlook.
I call it pragmatism, not skepticism. No, I mean, I think it's all very exciting, but I always wonder about, okay, so how do you go to market with that in a way that actually works for consumers? And that's why I thought there was a lot of promise in some of the various countertop devices that we have seen. I think there was I remember a flatbread making robot one year at SKS that I thought was just amazing, could produce little flatbread patties in something like 90 seconds. You get every 90 seconds, get a fresh one.
Not like non.
Yeah.
Really quickly. Yeah. You know, the channel question is interesting. It's kind of stepping back from the robotics. I saw this year at CES, GE Appliances started to really talk about electrification as a story. So this idea of, hey, how do we transform our kitchens, you know, use electric cooking, but it's much bigger than that. It's like power supply and home energy power management. And I don't know if you saw, they did a deal with Savant. So Savant and GE are working together to kind of run the electrified home. And I thought that was really interesting because it's the first time I saw an appliance maker work with a company who's basically doing smart home software in a big way. And Savant, to me, I think they have like an installer team, right? It's a high-end. I always see Savant as like a high-end smart home.
Right.
They probably have, they're working with integrators.
Yeah.
Yep.
The Cydia channel. So kind of getting to your point in a roundabout way, I think that long-term, some of these bigger solutions that require more technology would probably have to go through like a Cydia channel initially. We haven't really seen the fusion of like the Cydia channel like and the KBiz channel, which KBiz is the home kitchen design space.
Right.
But at some point, I think like there's going to be more people doing Cydia-like installations around kitchen design because there'll probably be more systems. One of the trends we're seeing in the kitchen is this thing called the invisible kitchen, where the technology ultimately disappears, recedes into the walls, goes into your kitchen counters. One of those early signs that is Whirlpool is working with one of the best induction downdraft companies out of Europe. And so induction downdraft, if you in your kitchen, you have these giant range hoods.
Yeah.
Basically sit at the from your ceiling that obscures a lot of views
and it's loud.
But you can actually get rid of that thing entirely if you use a good induction downdraft, and the downdraft technology is getting a lot better. So it just sucks all the smoke and the steam down into essentially a vent into your kitchen countertop.
Not your father's Gen Air.
No. And so I think, you know, that type of the idea, the invisible kitchen where all this technology goes away in terms of your eyesight, gets pulled into the countertop, is like, that's happening. We're starting to also see electrified countertops. So you remember the wireless power consortium, Qi chargers that you put your Apple phone on. They now have that ready to go to market for your countertop appliances. So I do a lot of rambling on your podcast.
No, Richard, but these are all great examples. And as you're talking about them, I'm thinking of vendors at past SKS expos that have shown those types of products, right? Like we've seen the demo of the power block built into the counter where you could put your mixer there, or you could put your hot pot there or what have you, and incorporating these technologies into what I think of as kitchen infrastructure. I really like this idea that you raised about this maybe, at least initially, starting through integrators, that somehow this becomes kind of like, just like you can go out and buy your own smart light bulb, you can go out and buy your own smart crock pot. But at the same time, if you want something that's built in or customized to your use, then maybe you go through a specialist for that. That makes a lot of sense to me.
And I think things being more integrated is important for some customers. My parents, for example, do not like anything on their countertops. I'm like, Mom, you should get, you know, this gadget or this, like you would love it. And she's like, no, I don't have any space on my countertops. I'm like, you have all kinds of space. You just don't want to look at it. And like, I don't have a problem with that. But for her, that's like a non-starter. She doesn't want anything like that. She won't even like, I'm like, you would love an air fryer. It's so much easier. She's like, nah, not going to do it. I'm like, okay, we literally use it like almost every day. And she's like, meh, nope. I'm not putting that on my countertop.
So random aside there in home builds, I don't know if you've noticed this trend. We bought a new house 2 years ago and we looked at a lot of new builds as part of the process. And we saw many kitchen designs that have started to readopt the concept of a scullery or like a work area that's behind a door that your guests coming over and hanging out with you in your show kitchen aren't going to see. You have counters where you have your dishwasher and you take your dirty dishes and you do your food prep and maybe even have some of those appliances. And that way they're actually not out on the counters that most people see. I thought that was a clever way of using some older home design to solve new home preferences.
I haven't seen that. Adam, I think Richard's like home shopping purchase range is much higher than mine. I don't know why you're, that sounds like a first world problem.
your show kitchen
and then actually the work kitchen.
Yeah, no, for real. For real. I'm not making this up. That's anyway, crazy. You hinted at this a little bit earlier, and I'm curious if you can touch on this a little bit more. You mentioned that from a venture perspective, from a funding perspective, a lot of the drive for some of the technologies that we're seeing is coming from climate and ecology concerns. How do you see that? That's not going to change. I don't. The ecology and climate situation we're in likely isn't going to change. So how do you see that evolving going forward? Do you think that's going to continue to be a big factor in where money gets invested?
I think so. I mean, it isn't just like, hey, people trying to feel good about themselves or being aspirational of like a corporate investor. I think these are real concerns that climate change, if you believe the science, is going to make it hard to grow grapes in Northern California. It's going to be hard to like grow coffee in Costa Rica. So that's challenging. So how do we start to rethink and invest in new ways to bring up food or like do things like CRISPR gene edited food? That's like an interesting idea. There's an argument to be made that like we're just animal agriculture is hugely resource intensive. So that's why there's been a lot of push towards like plant-based meats and plant-based milks. And so all of these challenges around the climate don't go away. It's the same reason you see the drive towards like electrification of cars and EVs. Food is a huge drain, a huge resource, and a huge emitter of carbon emissions. And so I think like that's not going to change. And this isn't just, I mean, there's a whole other side of investing in food tech that is around the digital transformation side. And that's really what I look at a lot at in the kitchen side. There is some overlap with mission-driven focus around things like mill. We'll get to that. So food waste reduction is like a big, I think, interesting category that both overlaps with the smart space, but also like is there's a mission to it because it helps reduce carbon emissions. But on the digital transformation side of food tech, that's where I spent a lot of time. That's where a lot of interesting stuff's happening in the smart kitchen. And that space has actually been hit kind of hard the last couple of years because the big appliance guys have pulled back on their innovation stuff. We could talk about that or not, but.
Yeah, I did want to ask you about that. I forget if it was LG or which company, but there was an announcement recently that one of the big manufacturers basically just laid off most of their content team. And what's that coming from?
Yeah, I think I broke that story. I wrote about Whirlpool laid off the entire Yumly team. And so,
Whirlpool,
you know, five years ago, 7 years ago, all these guys made their big acquisitions to do and get into digital recipes. What these appliance guys realize is they're not content guys. So like Whirlpool really doesn't know how to manage a content team. They know how to bend metal and make big metal boxes that they could sell. They still don't understand new business models, right? Like in a way that I think a lot of technology companies do. I think we're at a kind of inflection point where these appliance brands are saying, hey, where does this go for us? We know we need to think about the future. What does that mean? How do we digitally transform? I think they're figuring it out. And that's part of the reason why, insert pitch, we're bringing back the Smart Kitchen Summit to have that conversation.
Good.
What about AI? Does AI play a role in this? And do you think a lot of these old, like you said, bend metal companies will be able to find a way to incorporate it? Or is it going to come from new companies that are going to, you know, run over them because they're going to be built from the ground up to address that?
Yeah, if we're talking about the kitchen appliance space, the one good thing you could say if you're like a company that bends metal is like AI isn't going to instantly produce a dishwasher that lasts for 5 years. Like that still needs to be manufactured. And so I think the bigger threat for them is like kind of the rise of China's based appliance companies has been like probably hurting like the Electroluxes and the Whirlpools of the world. But yeah, AI is a great question, Adam. What does that mean from a your kitchen future? I think every company's struggling with this. I think like the consumer interaction layer, we talked a lot about it in the day about, remember the talk about a lot. I think that's just going to get more intelligent and your shopping is going to get kind of wrapped around personalized AI driven shopping experiences. The question is, where did the appliance company insert themselves in that equation? I still think they're trying to figure that out.
What do you think is maybe the best potential application of that? Like what will be the first useful thing in consumer kitchen stuff where AI can actually do something useful?
Old school AI, I guess computer vision, like machine learning, that stuff's really continuing to evolve. And so I saw some cool demos at CES this past year where basically there's essentially a camera inserted in your kind of overhang on your countertop. It's monitoring heat. It kind of knows where you are. And if you leave, imagine an old person. A lot of the challenges around cooking as you get older is like you become forgetful. Cooking in the kitchen is like the number one source of kitchen fires in the US. Imagine if you could put like a system in there for someone who's like, you know, in their 80s, they want to remain in their home and you can monitor the oven and it can turn it off. If they wander away, they become forgetful. I think that's a really useful application.
Heck, I need that. I mean,
yeah. Richard's getting up there in years, Adam.
We need to get him this thing.
When he wanders away from the countertop, cooking countertop, we have to turn off the oven.
For me, one of them that would be super useful is like the food inventory thing, either pantry, freezer, fridge. I don't know. We've got three kids. Like, you know, we bought a freezer during COVID for the garage to like actually have more capacity because our freezer situation was like a joke of what the capacity was on our normal freezer. But like, yeah, sometimes just knowing what you have is kind of a tricky problem. And then, you know, you end up buying more of, you know, something you actually have a bunch of or, you know, stuff like that.
And this does seem like an area where AI could really help. Yeah. I mean, for years, companies have been talking about using AI and have been talking about machine learning and computer vision as a way of managing inventory and helping you know from that inventory what might be some meal options if I have 15 minutes or half an hour or whatever. But it seems like we're with everything else that AI is doing now in generative AI and in computer vision innovation.
Yeah,
we should be there now, right? I just get that smart refrigerator we've been talking about for 15 years now?
That's the dream of Samsung. They're still working at it, although they've kind of taken more of a design bent now. They're focusing on the design, or kind of the design aspects. It sure seems like it with computer vision, with wearables and all these things. There's two sides, right? There's the Tupperware side. Like that category has been boring and hasn't really evolved at all for the past 50 years. And then the refrigerator side, it's still a giant cold box where stuff gets pushed to the back and you forget about it. So I don't know. I think as all this gets tied together with our shopping list, it seems like as we shop, because I use like my phone or I use for my shopping list, that should all kind of be ingested into an AI system. And I should have reminders to say, Mike, you're about out of this, or hey, don't buy that now. You should basically save that because you have meat in the freezer. Like that seems like something we should have solved by now. So I agree with you. I think the companies like Samsung are working on it. So
you were talking about food waste earlier. Like, how about you should eat this today because it's about to go bad?
Yeah.
And, you know, we run into that all the time. Like you said, the stuff that gets pushed to the back of the fridge or whatever, and you end up throwing stuff away. It'd be nice to like have a prioritized list of, hey, you should have these meals this week because this food's about to go bad.
Yeah. And there's been a number of startups working on essentially gas sensors, right? So the interesting technology there is like, hey, once food starts to expire, it usually starts emitting gas. And that's the type of science you can actually detect and create an alert system. Hey, there's a sticker. There's a little light that turns on, or it sends you a notification. And there's a couple of different approaches there, but I think you're right. Like that, it's not just reminders, but also like maybe we could sense when this thing is about to go bad and send you an alert.
I think that would solve a lot of problems. And that could work both in a refrigerator and in a pantry. right? I mean, same sort of thing. Stuff gets shoved to the back of the pantry. You have the same problem. And then you have to get rid of it all. And not to do a commercial for Mill, but one of the products I've been really interested in that you've covered is the Mill food waste system. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because of all the gadgets that I hear about these days, that's the one that's really caught my attention.
Yeah. And it's a great story for this show because the founders are Nest guys. So early Nest founders, early Nest guys, they sell to Google, have a good ride there, start to kind of get bored. Matt Rogers is the CEO. They start to think about, hey, what can I do to reduce food waste? I'm wasting all this food. What can I do about it? So they came up with this idea called the Mill, which is essentially, they don't like to call it a composter. And they'll correct you on that. They call it a food recycler. And that makes sense because not everyone has compost. What intrigued a lot of people early on is like, it takes your food waste, reduces it down to kind of essentially pellets. And then they had created a way for you to then send this on to essentially a place that makes chicken feed, because not everyone has a backyard garden or whatever. So not everyone needs compost, but a lot of the early stories about, hey, turn your food waste into chicken feed. And so they have a lot of other ways they can do it now, but it's an interesting gadget. My one critique is it's expensive. I think they're struggling with that a little bit, you know, and they also make you pay for a monthly rental. I also think like, hey, it's focused on the part of the problem that's like, once the food's already wasted, let's focus some technology on helping us reduce food waste. And in my conversations with Matt Rogers, the CEO, that's next. Like they definitely are going to focus on like maybe making the smart refrigerator, maybe making the smart Tupperware. But this one is really kind of their first product.
I think it's really interesting in its design. You know, you mentioned their background in Nest. It has an industrial design that makes it look at home next to your trash can in the kitchen. The only difference is it needs a plug. And, you know, so they've managed to take this concept of indoor composting or having like a waypoint in your home prior to going to your composting bed. And that's a gross environment. It attracts bugs, it smells, into this just kind of standalone thing that is self-sustaining and ultimately creates something that maybe you can put out for the birds or whatever. Yeah. So I think it's a really cool product, but you're right. The price point, which if you buy it outright, I think is $1,000. That's a lot. That's a big bite to take, but it's also reducing the impact that food waste has in trash is a whole separate conversation that is problematic.
And I don't think most consumers are motivated by climate concerns in their kitchen, unfortunately. But I've been trying out a Mill, and what's cool about it is it you can literally put like a couple weeks worth of food waste in there, and it kills the smell because it does grind it down. It applies heat, and so it's not just a rotting piece of fruit or meat in your compost that you have to take that out. It reduces it down and takes some moisture out. So it really does make your life easier in the kitchen if you are a composter or if you try to manage your food waste.
Yeah, I think it's a cool idea. Are there any other home kitchen gadgets that have caught your attention or that you think are worth mentioning? I understand that I'm not going to get my bar machine that can make any beverage I want it to anymore. That's not going to happen.
Oh, yeah, the canna. You know, I've been wanting to, if my wife would allow me, to go to like an induction cooktop for a while. The challenge with doing that is it's expensive because you have to oftentimes get an electrician in. It's at a 220. It's almost like an EV. It draws a huge amount of power. But there's a company called Impulse Labs, and there's one other startup doing a similar thing where they're essentially building a battery into your induction cooktop. So imagine you don't have to hire an electrician. That makes their life easier. But also, it acts as it could act as a whole home battery backup, or at least a kitchen battery backup. So that's a cool concept. It almost acts like a power wall.
Can I plug my microwave into it so I won't have to reset the clock every time we lose power?
Yeah, exactly.
That would be ideal.
Yeah, exactly.
Solve the clock problem.
Really, let's solve that. That would be...
Yeah, that would be a smart kitchen. Add a little battery in your microwave.
Ah, man. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break for sponsors, and then we'll return with some talk about what you're up to. We have Smart Kitchen Summit coming up. You manage The Spoon, and like we said, you've been podcasting a lot. So we'll be right back. Everyone says that starting a podcast is easy, but let me tell you, making a podcast is hard work. That's where today's sponsor, Lightning Pod, comes in. If you have a podcast or you want to start one, then you should check them out. They can help you with every step of the podcast production process. We've been working with Lightning Pod founder, Eric Johnson, for more than a year, and he's really helped us take the Smart Home Show to the next level. Eric currently helps us with editing and copywriting, but he's also available to help your podcast with recording, monetization, website design, and more. Learn more at lightningpod.fm. All experience levels are welcome, so whether you're a veteran podcaster or a total newbie, you should check him out. That's lightningpod.fm.
All right. So, Mike, what's going on at the Spoon these days?
Well, like I said, we're bringing back the Smart Kitchen Summit. So that's been taking a lot of our time. We're focused on that pretty heavily. We are also doing our second annual Food AI Summit, which is going to be in Berkeley, California. That is like this whole event focused on how AI is changing the food system. And that's very broad from farm to fork. And we're just like doing more podcasts and more video lately at the Spoon, having fun doing that with my friend Carlos Rodella. And we're doing a news show and talking to lots of interesting folks.
So for that Smart Kitchen Summit, when's that going to be? Where? How can people get signed up?
Yeah, it's going to be in Seattle, the original home. And it's going to be June 4th and 5th. So less than a month away, which petrifies me. And
you always have it wrapped tight. I don't know what you worry about.
I'm calmed by the fact my good friend Richard will be there moderating a panel. And so, yeah, so that's it. And, you know, we have a discount code for our podcast, but people can use it on yours. If you use podcasts at checkout, you get, I think it's like 15% off tickets. So if you want to go and meet Richard.
Still smartkitchensummit.com?
Yep. Check it out.
There you go.
Excellent. All right. Well, we are tight on time for this recording, so we're not going to answer a question this time. So, Mike, we are really appreciative that you could join us and for rescheduling past Adam's meetings and my being sick and everything else. So I'm glad we did get this in and got to talk with you about what's going on in the space. How can people find out more if they want to get in touch with you or find out more about what you're doing?
Yeah, just go to the Spoon, Google the Spoon, it's usually the first result. I'm always happy to connect with people on LinkedIn in this space because I still love the smart home. I still love talking to people about the future of like how we live. That's really interesting to me. So just find me on LinkedIn or Twitter.
All right. We have to get you over more active on Mastodon. I know you're there, but we need to get you more active. All right. How about you, Adam? Where are people going to find you?
I, like Mike, I'm still on Twitter, but you can find my company at connectsense.com and, you know, all the other smart social medias and things like that. How about you, Richard?
Well, I like Mike too, but I'm not on X. I am I am out over there and I have moved to Mastodon entirely.
Why not Threads?
You know, I'm just tired of giving a bunch of rich guys all of my information and photos. I think there's a better way.
It makes sense. Okay.
I'm not your typical open source federated solutions guy. So this is new ground for me, but you can find me over at Mastodon at Richard Gunther. And awesome. The Smart Home Show is part of technologyf.fm, which is a collection of great smart podcasts, including the Home Tech Podcast, your show, the Spoon Podcast, Mike, and my other show, Home On, which, believe it or not, is coming back with a new episode this month. Awesome. And smarthome.fm is where you're going to find our show notes and details about our episodes. You can send us feedback at feedback@smarthome.fm. And of course, our shows are in all of your podcast players, whichever you prefer. So if you like it, please do us a favor. Ratings and reviews are great, but the most important thing is let people know. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks for joining us, Mike.
Thank you.